Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. You know, before they were legends of outlaw country, they were lost souls looking for their sound. Don't miss Mandy Moore and the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the rise of outlaw country music and its biggest stars. Hear how one woman's vision in her tiny living room, far from Nashville's Music Row, became the epicenter of a musical movement. Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in The Boar's Nest. Listen now at audible.com/The Boar's Nest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. For 60 years, St. Jude doctors and researchers have helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. But we need your help getting that number to 100%. And most important, your support means that families will never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment, travel, housing, or food. Now, that peace of mind means so much. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
This is the year to stop overpaying for your family plan. So choose a Straight Talk wireless family plan. Unlimited data, talk, and text on a reliable 5G network. And you can get a new line starting at $25 per line per month for 4 lines, plus taxes and fees and no contracts. That's good decision making. Available at Walmart and on straighttalk.com. Family plan discount with 4 lines, all on the Silver Unlimited plan. Not combinable with auto pay discount. In times of traffic, your data may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Video streams at up to 480p. Welcome to episode 310. This is super cool. Lisa Loeb is on, and she tells a story why she was never invited back to perform on David Letterman. She performed, and something happened, and she was never invited back. Pretty wild story. And also, Shai Carter is on. He talks about writing songs for Tim McGraw, Keith Urban, Charlie Puth, how the Charlie Puth song came together, the massive one, which was I'm Only One Call Away. That song? I'm only one. That one. Pretty cool story. Call away. I'll be there to save. Let's look at the big new music releases of the week. Travis Denning has an EP called Dirt Road Down. Here is the title track. We like Travis Denning. We're a Travis Denning podcast for sure. Number four this week, Ingrid Andress has a new song with Sam Hunt called Wishful Drinking. I get hopeful when I'm tipsy, thinking you might actually miss me. It's 100 proof, nothing I won't do for another round of me and you. I'm wishful drinking. At number three, Luke Bryan has a song out called Songs You've Never Heard. I think about it and I laugh until it hurts. Cause I can hear you singing along to songs you never heard. Jake Owen has a new song out called Best Thing Since Backroads at number two. You're the best thing since Backroads, baby. Pedal to the metal with the windows down. Sunshine setting on the cross that saved me. Hanging from a rear view, red dirt clouds. And number one, who I just think she's great and worked with her on American Idol, Lacey K. Booth with Charles Kelly of Lady A. She released her debut EP. Here's a song called Broken Heart Still Beats. Cause this broken heart still beats, waiting on you to make up your mind. Still, you hear the heartbeat in it?
Yeah,
like that's pretty cool. We should get her in here.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we should reach out to Lacey. Some other songs coming out that you may want to check out. Thomas Rhett put out a song called Redneck Be Like. The Weeknd put out Take My Breath. Maddie and Tate put out a song called Life Ain't Fair. Ashley Cook has a new song with Jimmy Allen called Good Goodbye. Let's see. Scotty McCurry has Same Truck. Sheryl Crow put out If It Makes You Happy live from the Ryman. Do we have that clip or no?
I can find it.
That's okay. That's a jam, though. If it makes you happy, for all you kids out there. And Carly Pearce put out a new song as well. Album releases. Billy Currington has a new album called Intuition. George Harrison, All Things Must Pass, the 50th anniversary edition. Nas, let's see. Barbra Streisand, Release Me Too. Chris Young. Various, Now That's What I Call Decade, 1980s. All right. Quick news is Garth Brooks is reassessing the remainder of a stadium tour because of the COVID outbreak. Country star has tipped the Waffle House waitress $1,000. We have discovered who that is. That is
Struggle Jennings.
Shout out Struggle Jennings. Yellowstone prequel is happening with Tim and Faith, 1883. They'll play the Duttons. And then Nickelback reveal they're working on a new album. How about that? Lisa Loeb coming up in a second. You may remember the song Stay.
You say.
Fantastic.
I only hear what I want to.
This is Lisa Loeb and Nine Stories. I guess that was her band. But then that disappeared. Nine Stories.
I feel like the first album.
Here is Do You Sleep.
Because I saw you as you walked across my room. You looked out the window. You looked at the moon. And you sat on the corner of my bed. And you smoked with a ghost in the back of my head. Now I don't know. And I don't care.
Here is one of my favorites, I Do, from
1997.
She also put out a kids record. Here is Feel What You Feel with Craig Robinson, who you would know from The Office. This won a Grammy. This song won a Grammy. Yeah. Pretty cool. So Lisa Loeb coming up in a second. Just a massive fan. All right, thank you guys. Here is today's podcast. Hey, we're on now with Lisa Loeb, who I'm a massive fan, you know? Just so you know, Lisa, I'm a massive fan.
I love it. We both got our glasses. I'm using a virtual background on the Zoom portion of our interview right now.
You are.
Which is like so distracting. No wonder my kids get so distracted in their Zoom classrooms, especially my son.
And you are in your Zoom background, which I find you, there are pictures of you in your Zoom background. That is you, right?
I know. Well, I have this musical that's opening this week on Broadway on Demand, and I'm literally like having some kind of acid trip. I don't even, you know, I've never tried acid, but only a light acid peel on my face. But I've never used a virtual background, but I have this musical theater poster kind of background behind me, and my face is indeed on it.
And I do want to talk about that in one second, but here's how we came together on a weird twist of events is that I have, from your music to your reality show to, you know, what the kids record, the kids music, because we did a little kids project too, and I saw how, you know, awesome and difficult that can be at times. And so I've just always been a fan of yours. And I have this show that's on Nat Geo and Disney Plus, and they just knew I was a fan. I didn't send that box to anybody, and I saw you get one of these boxes, and I was like, Lisa Loeb got one of these boxes and she posted about it on Instagram. I thought it was one of the coolest things ever. And so my producer was like, hey, why don't we reach out to her because she has a Broadway project we could talk about. And that's how it came together. Disney knew I was a fan of you, sent that to you. You posted it and here we are.
It's crazy. You know, I have to say every day when we finally did get in person in school with my kids, there's a huge billboard of your show up. And as I'm driving my second grader, now he's going to be a third grader, every day to school, it was like so aspirational to see a picture of you with all those like tools and weapons and
a lot of stuff I wasn't good at using, honestly.
Well, it was sort of aspirational because my son is super into swords and, you know, anything that's like something I don't really want him playing with, basically, is what he's into. To see it up on a poster and know that we get to watch a show about somebody who does get to play with all that stuff, it was very aspirational. And so then I did get a box of it was a really nice promotional box. That's like one of the nicest ones I've ever seen. It had like a Yeti water bottle and like work gloves. Like a really nice lunch pail. Like I want to go somewhere and like bring.
You want to go have lunch just because of that? Yeah, that's well. I'm super pumped that you're here. Has anyone ever come up to you and said, "Hey, you look like Lisa Loeb," not realizing that you are her?
That happens all the time. It happens all the time. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. Actually, there was a guy who was helping me. My toaster oven broke last December. And, you know, it's like this big, it's this really important piece of equipment in our kitchen, the toaster oven. And then I realized I want one of those air fryer toaster ovens, you know, where you can like make your fake chicken wings and French fries. So I kept trying to do research and I finally realized, okay, this is the one that I want, this Breville, this one company. And then I started looking and I was like, oh, you know, I'm one of those people who has to overthink everything and like do all the research. Finally, I was like, I'm going to get this. And I went to Bed Bath & Beyond. I'm going to get it. They didn't have it. They had it on display, but they didn't actually have it. But the guy from the company walked in. He had his company name on his mask and on his hat. And I was like, oh my gosh, do you know where to get this toaster oven? So for weeks, he was calling all these different stores, even from Bed Bath & Beyond. He was calling like Sur La Table and like William Sonoma. I'm like, dude, you can't make a speaker phone call at Bed Bath & Beyond calling other stores. He's like, no, it's cool. It's cool. And he finally, he tracked down the one last remaining toaster oven thing in the whole state of California for me in the right color. And I was like, so happy. I was like, God, that guy was such a great rep. Like he was so nice. He really cared about getting me that toaster oven. And then at the end, he texted me and said, oh, and by the way, if you're ever playing a concert in town, you gotta get me. I was like, I thought I was just like a nice lady he was helping. But no, people always stop me and say that, or they say, oh, your glasses look like Lisa Loeb or whatever. Yeah.
Do you go, that is me? Cause that's an awkward thing. Cause people will do that to me times too. Like, hey, have I ever told you to look like Bobby Bones? And it's weird to go, I am him. It's kind of that weird. Do you ever go, that is me? Or do you go, yeah, I get that sometimes.
I think in my cool, when I was more cool, like in my 20s and more like hip and like, yeah, I might have said like, yeah, I get that a lot. But I would say, yeah. But then I realized as I've gone along, you kind of want to treat everybody like a grandma. You're like, yes, it is. You know, like let enjoy their moment with them so that they can enjoy their moment more and not be the one who's like, I mean, I've done both. I've done like, yeah, I get that a lot. Or, yeah, that's me. Yeah, it's me. What do? Do you give them the enjoyment of like, it is, I am, well, I am. Yes, I do look like, well, I am Lisa Loeb.
And right now I have on clear glasses because usually if I wear clear glasses, nobody stops me. Nobody knows what I look like if I wear clear glasses. So I never get stuck. But if I am wearing my normal glasses, someone will say, hey, does anyone ever tell you like a Bobby Bones? Depending on if I think they hate me or not, because sometimes if they're just not, I just know they are not a fan whatsoever of comedy or radio show that I do. I'm like, I do get that a lot. Crazy. He's a real loser, huh? And it depends how they play it back. But most of the times I'll be like, hey, that's actually me. Thank you. You know, most of the time I do. Yeah.
You have to figure it out. I know in college, actually, I was taking dance class and it was African dance and I was really not good at it. And I had a couple pair of contact lenses for auditions or whatever, but I'm kind of allergic, so I can't wear them really much, like maybe to a 3D IMAX movie or something every once in a while. But even that I don't do anymore. Or like for an audition, I'll wear contact lenses. Or if I'm trying on glasses, you have to wear contacts so you can see what they look like. But anyway, I purposefully did not wear glasses at my final African dance class out on the middle of campus because I didn't want anyone to see me and be like, oh, there she is. And literally my friends didn't even see me. They couldn't. In college, I wore glasses too. And in high school, people just didn't even see me without my glasses. They didn't recognize me, people that I knew well. Yeah.
I have three music questions for you, if you'll allow them. My first one is, when you put together a set list, like, do you still play all the massive hits? Like, do you feel like you are going to play that for the fans regardless, even though you've made so much music in between, you know, 1994 when Stay came out or Stay went number one to today? Like, do you put them all in? And where do you put them in your set list? Do you open with a big one? Do you close with, you know, Stay? Like, what happens there?
This is all very well thought out. It's been a process over 30 years to like really home in on and figure it out. I put Stay. Well, it depends. If there's a bunch of fans and they have so many requests that I don't end up playing Stay, that's fine. But I am really aware of it. I remember early on when I played at CBGB's, and I remember my drummer, who I'm still friends with now, he was my drummer at the time. He was like, oh, I can't believe we have to play Stay. And I'm like, that's one of the songs. Like, you know, it's like one of every other song. It happened to get really, really, really popular right now. But there are people driving in from New Jersey and stuff to like see us play that song. Like, We got to play the song. So I understand, being a music fan myself, if I go see Hall & Oates, which is an old example, but if I go see Hall & Oates, I want them to play Rich Girl. I want them to play Kiss on My List. I want them to play those songs, you know, like I respect the fan who knows that song and that's it. And, you know, I know that it's, again, it's like that grandma perspective. You see people really enjoy it and they have a really close connection with it. And it's a song I'm very proud of. So I play it. I do play it about halfway through the set, because early on when I was doing a lot of radio shows, when the song was really popular, and like outdoor radio shows where it was a bunch of different artists, if we played it early in the set, people would just walk away. They're like, okay, I heard the song. Play. I'm like, oh my God. Usually I play seated theaters now, so it's not an issue. People don't get up and leave. But I do love giving the people a hard time who do get up and get a beer during the middle of my set. I'm like, how can a person get up in the middle of a theater show to like go get a snack or whatever, and then they come back in and they request stay later in the set? I usually do request. I'm like, you know, when you got up to leave, that's when I played the song. But anyway, so I play Stay in the Middle. I usually play my song I Do at the end, which was also like a top 40 hit. And then I usually start the set with something upbeat, and I mix up new songs and old songs and songs that I have stories about and songs that are upbeat. And I also have usually a few kids songs I play in my grown-up set. And I usually play some requests as well, but I try to mix it up because you can kind of feel the crowd, you know, their engagement. And usually, I have different categories for songs in my head, and I like to split them up so that you get a good range from the beginning to the end. You don't feel like you're like some concerts I go to, I'm like, are they still playing the same song? Like what's happening?
I remember you playing David Letterman, and I looked it up. It was 1994. Cause I was a huge David Letterman fan. He was my hero. And I was a huge fan of yours. Do you remember what it was like playing that show and Dave actually coming over afterward and like being like, hey, how are you? Cause it seemed like he was a big fan.
Well, that's an interesting thing too. I was a huge fan of Letterman. I joined his fan club when I was a kid. I signed up for the fan club in the back of Rolling Stone magazine. I think I did it too because I love kitschy stuff. And like he sent out a fly swatter and like all this weird David Letterman stuff was like the David Letterman fan club. And so it was really exciting being on a show. I felt very like-minded with David Letterman. I like having a dry sense of humor, and I've been a big fan of like Father Guido Sarducci and a lot of different comedians. So when I went on the show, I felt like, oh, this is so cool, you know, and it was really cold there. We didn't speak to Letterman at all. He didn't speak to us. And we played, and it was like a big deal, you know. And at the end, I was being coy and I played, and he came over to say, thank you so much. And I went, and I pet him on the shoulder, like I went like to pet him like that, you know, as if this is his, here's a water glass. Later I found out they thought I put a sticker on him and they never asked me to come back.
No way.
That's what I heard. That was the story. I was like, what? What? I know. And I'm friendly with like the producer of the show, and I'm friendly with, you know, the band, Will Lee and all those guys in the band. And I was like, this is so weird. Cause you know, you go on Conan and Conan's like a person. You have a conversation with him. He's like a person.
Like a real life human being. Yeah.
Letterman didn't act like a person to me. And I was so sad about that because you know, we are huge fans, right? There's some people you meet like Sandler. He's a person. You have a conversation with him. But Letterman, I'm still waiting for the day when I can like have a conversation with him and understand what is going on.
You know, I've heard that from quite a few people who have done that show where you don't meet him. He might come over and it's very cold and then you just go away. The sticker thing, I've never heard that story before. The part about going on and him not coming over and giving you a big hug, or like Jay Leno, Jay will go over when he was doing that show, or Jimmy Fallon.
He'd visit you backstage. Yeah. Jay Leno would come to the dressing room every time and say, hey, how are you doing? Good to see you. Like ask, how's your mom and dad? Like if he had met them before, like he was prepped, you know, he knew. But Letterman, you know, and it's hard, you know, showbiz, like meeting people who they are versus who their persona is. You know, you see them on TV, you're like, we could be friends. We should be friends because we have the same sense of humor. And, you know, I listened to Bob and Ray growing up, and I bet Letterman listened to Bob and Ray growing up. And like, we have the same sense of humor. And then you don't actually even, you meet like shaking hands, or when they're speaking to you, they're not like they're speaking to you. Like we're speaking to each other right now. It's so weird to be on a talk show and the person's not actually connecting and speaking to you. It's weird.
And that never resolved itself, huh?
No.
I mean, weird. That's weird.
Letterman's listening. He can connect.
I would love to connect all three of us. We just get in a room and have it.
Hash it out. Just hash it out.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com.
Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Amy Brown here to talk about the incredible work that's being done by St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and to ask you today to join me in becoming a partner in hope. When you make a donation to St. Jude, you're helping an organization that has helped push the overall childhood cancer survivor rate from 20% to more than 80%. And I can tell you from personal experience, that number and the hope that it brings is invaluable. Families do not have to worry about a thing. Treatment is covered, travel, housing, food. And when you're a family that's going through this, like imagine you're a parent, your kid gets cancer. You need to focus on that child. You don't need to be worrying about other things. And financial stuff can get really stressful. St. Jude covers it. Your support means families never receive a bill from St. Jude for treatment. And when you sign up for just $19 a month, you're going to get the new This Shirt Saves Lives tee. So join me in helping St. Jude in the fight against childhood cancer. Become a partner in hope and text Bobby to 785-833. That's B-O-B-B-Y to 785-833.
I do want to talk about your project, Together Apart. So let us start with, like, what was the inspiration behind getting this together?
Well, it's a little bit of a long story, but I went to Brown University in Rhode Island, and because of COVID, basically we can start any sentence lately of because of COVID, we started having some Zoom reunions. So we had Brown Zoom reunions last summer. There was like an LGBTQ one, and then that led to a Zoom theater people reunion, and then that led to a musical theater reunion. And during that reunion, one of the more organized professors, there's a lot of professors who, a lot of people who I graduated with who are now like theater professors and writers and actors and all the, and some people are doctors. But anyway, we had pages and pages of people. So a friend said, let's go around and each person say what they're doing, how COVID is affecting them, So that's how it came together through a Zoom reunion. And for a lot of us, even though it was strange being at home during COVID, it's also been a really creative time for a lot of us who normally live lives in a different way to be communicating and connecting through Zoom. And that's also what the musical is about.
If you guys want to watch it, it's at togetherapartmusical.com. You can go there. It's the Broadway on demand platform, togetherapartmusical.com. Am I saying that right? Like okay.
It's called Together Apart. And originally we thought the artwork would say together apart, because you know, it's like when you're in Zoom, you're in these little windows and you're together, but you're also separate. And yet, like when we wrote the musical, even the meta side of it, there were people in Italy and Germany, California, Chicago, New York, Ohio. We were all connecting in this amazing way and getting to be better friends and collaborating. And although we were so apart, we were also together. So, you know, I think there's a lot of focus on that during this time. I don't know if you found that during this time. Like, were you at home doing most of your...
Oddly, we were out shooting that show. I would do my radio show every day, but then we would shoot Breaking Bobby Bones, that TV show. We did it right in the middle of COVID, all of it. And it was extremely difficult. But a lot of the time on the road was being locked in a hotel and having to quarantine before we all got together. So even though I was out, you're still kind of alone. Ours would be out and alone. Instead of together alone, it'd be out and alone, out and alone. But you guys go to togetherapartmusical.com and proceed to support the Actors Fund, an organization that provides emergency financial assistance to members of the entertainment community. And so that is fantastic. Yeah. Congratulations on getting something up and going.
There were so many people who, you know, were friends with a lot of professional actors, and not everybody is like, you know, able to make a living during this time. It was really tough. So the Actors Fund has really come out to help not only actors, but people behind the scenes. And we were able to raise over $30,000 so far for the Actors Fund. And you can still do that. To watch the show itself is free on this great platform. But like you said, you can go straight to the website, togetherapartmusical.com, and you'll see where to, you know, sign up, and it you'll be able to watch for free for a few weeks. And you know, I've heard a lot of positive reviews. It takes you a lot of different places.
Well, if you allow me to talk about your music career for a second, because I'm such a big fan of your music. Are you going back out on the road, right, in September in the fall? Are you excited about that or no?
I'm excited to see fans.
Yeah.
And I have been doing a lot of live streaming shows and connecting with people in England and all over the place, like doing these live shows. I miss performing in person. I did an event in Santa Fe the other day, but it was like in an open air. It was an indoor space, but with all these huge doors that open to the outside. I'm nervous with the Delta variant, I've got to say.
Yeah, me too. We have...
things have changed now, all of a sudden.
Agree. We have three music festivals, my group does, and that we're putting on festivals, entire festivals, ourselves. And I'm starting to get nervous about it too, frankly. And these are outdoor, but you know, yeah. You are seeing things go back up. And so are you kind of like, I have these shows scheduled, but I don't know?
I had the caveat when I booked the shows that, look, if things are not looking good, we're going to do everything to be safe.
Right.
There's a little bit of an issue in that I look back in the 90s when I started, I was playing concerts all through the 80s and 90s. It used to be the thing. Everybody was smoking, right? And you would go to a concert. I don't know if you knew this. And you would go to a concert and you'd come home and your clothes smelled like smoke. And when you're on stage and everybody's smoking, it's like I used to tell the club owners and the theater people, I was like, look, we're not going to have any smoking. You have to tell everybody it's a no smoking show, because I don't want to be a singer in this room with a bunch of smokers. And they used to give me a hard time and say, well, we can't ask the audience to do that. That's not cool. And I said, you got to do it. I don't want to play a show, you know, where people are smoking. So they would do it. But with the mask thing, I said, look, you got to ask the audience to wear masks. Like they're not even going to be like lower capacity or sitting far apart from each other. It's not an outside show. These aren't outside shows. And I've been hearing since the government or the states or whatever can't mandate the masks, I can't either. So
right.
I'm living day to day. I'm hoping that these shows are going to happen. I'm so excited to see my fans. I love playing music. I put a record out right before COVID. I've got a million songs and stories to tell. And it's so fun to connect with the audience. Safety first. Let's see as we move forward.
This is my life. I want to play a clip of this. Can she hear clips, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay, let me play a clip of This Is My Life.
Then I woke up, didn't know if I had fallen.
to sleep. Was I dreaming? Am I dreaming? Is this happening to me? Yeah, I woke up and I noticed all these little.
So this is from your album, A Simple Trick to Happiness, but you put it out right before the pandemic. Did you feel like any sort of, you know, press that you were doing, any sort of momentum that was being built, was all lost immediately and the record kind of floated away? Or were you able to keep it going through the pandemic by doing stuff on social media?
Yeah, it evolved. It changed. You know, it's funny, when 2020 started, I always, since 1994 or earlier, my friends and I, as a joke, would make up like a catchphrase for the year, like more in 94, which meant like more drinking. And I still never did enough drinking. So in 2004, that came back again, more in 2004. And in 2020, it was like, see you in person. Part of it was like, I'm going to see people in person in 2020. I'm going to really connect with people. And then, you know, a few months in, it's like, well, you're actually not going to see anyone in person. But it evolved, because we ended up connecting with so many more people through Zoom than I probably would have connected with in person, maybe, and even my neighbors and like people in my own community I really connected with. But it just changed, you know. Luckily, we had shot a video for every single song already. So we put those up. It was just a time, you know, in the back of my head, I think I'd always been trying to grow my social media presence, my connection with my fans through, I didn't know about Zoom, but, you know, through virtual concerts and stuff. So it gave me finally an opportunity to learn my technology in my house a little bit better. I'm not in my house right now. I'm in Texas, but in my own house, I've got lights and I've got really good Wi-Fi, and I know how to set up all my stuff. So it became a time of learning and connecting with people in other ways. And definitely, it's a bummer. I mean, I had gone to Japan, because the album always comes out first in Japan. So I did get to go to Japan before COVID. But it was just a different time, let's say.
Together Apart, I want you guys to check it out. It's a collection of new short musicals written, composed, directed by, and featuring Brown University alumni, of which Lisa is. She's spearheaded the musical. It does premiere today, August 6th, on Broadway On Demand, and available to watch for 2 weeks on the Broadway On Demand platform. You can go to togetherapartmusical.com for more info. togetherapartmusical.com. I'm definitely gonna go check it out. I'm a massive fan of yours. Thank you for taking the time to, you know, hang out and tell me some stories. And again, just appreciate your time, Lisa, and good luck with the project.
And congrats on your show as well. I hope to meet you in person one day soon.
When you come through Nashville, cause that's where I am, and you're doing a show and we're able to not get COVID, I will be there. I will be there and I will be singing along.
Great. And you'll bring some grits.
And I'll bring, you got it. All right. Bye, Lisa.
Bye, thank you. Take care.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink, shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah, that's what the whole store basically is, fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. T-E-C-O-V-A-S.
Yeah. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How do the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as the Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts. That's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Bachrach as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash,
alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest. Sue Brewer and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest.
Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833.
We are good.
All right, in studio now with Shai Carter, who comes in and brings the energy. We went on, before we went on, he's like, woo, party. I'm like, you didn't wake up when we did. We woke up at 3 o'clock this morning.
Woo-wee.
And you said you just woke up.
Yes, I did.
But you've been on the road all weekend, right, playing?
Yes.
Were you at Watershed?
I was.
Pretty cool up there, huh?
It was amazing. The view was incredible, man.
Difficult to get to.
Yeah.
But worth it once you're there.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah. And how did you and McGraw become friends? Because on Instagram, I saw a picture of you with him, because I think you did a song with him.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. But I've seen you with him. And I remember talking to Tim maybe a year and a half or so ago even, and he was talking about you. Mm. So how did that relationship come together?
Well, it's been a long, long time thing. Missy Gallimore, she's Byron Gallimore's wife. And Byron produced all of Tim and Faith's records. And because I did Stuck Like Glue with Sugarland back in 2010, and Byron produced it. So one day around that time, I was here in Nashville, and I met Missy. She said, hey, you know, you're Shai Carter. You did that song with my husband. I said, yeah. She was like, would you like to work with Faith Hill? And I was like, yeah, of course. So, you know, next thing you know, I was like pulling up to their house, and Faith was just like such an amazing she just showed me so much love and was so nice. And then eventually I met Tim, and, you know, we did a couple songs on the album that they did together. I did Speak to a Girl for them. And they just always just show me love, man. And it's, they like my music, and they've just been so kind to me. So we just became friends. And whenever I got something, man, he helps me out, you know.
When you say you did Speak to a Girl, you produced that for them?
I wrote it.
You wrote it for them?
Yeah, I was one of the writers.
Oh, so did you get that to them purposefully, or did you write it and go, I think this is good for this project that you're doing?
We got it to Missy, because Missy would always find songs for them, and still yeah. does, and she's just a beast at it. And we actually wrote the song in Jamaica, me and these two other writers, and Missy got a hold of it. I think BMG might have sent it to her or yeah. something, and she fought hard for it. She's like, we need this song, you know. I was like, hey, cool, I'd love for y'all to have it.
Where'd you grow up?
All over the place. I tell people I grew up in Memphis because that was like my main formative years. But, you know, outside of Memphis, outside Atlanta, we're in this small little town in Michigan. Like,
what moved you all over the place?
Oh, my dad, he just, they always say, are we a military family? Which he was in the Marines. But at that time, he was working for the IRS. And wherever he would get a promotion, that's where we would go.
So what was it about music as you're moving around? I mean, was that a stable part of, like, your childhood, because regardless, because I moved around too a lot.
Mm.
Was music to you always important, because regardless of where you went, you still had it?
You know, I never even looked at it like that, but that's absolutely true. Yeah, because I just remember riding, when we had to leave a place, just riding and crying and listening to the songs, like listening to Boys to Men songs, and Mama playing Tracy Chapman and Van Morrison, and there was... Yeah, I can't remember another one, but...
Whenever you guys are moving around and you're a kid, are you playing music at all? And where did, and why, what got you into actual, like, I think I want to do this for my career as a songwriter?
Yeah, when I was in Memphis, I was, like, 10, 11, 12. I remember I got a keyboard from my uncle when I was like 11 years old, and it had these little pre-made beats. You could kind of make the beats and hit a couple chords on there. And so I would have a beat going, and I would just make these rhymes and just make whatever little silly song I could to it. And I just loved it. And I would just be in my room also just pretending like I'm singing to a crowd and stuff. And like shortly after that, I formed a little group, and we sang at talent shows and stuff. Like we sang at the Mid-South Fair. We won the talent show at the high school.
What kind of group? Was it a singing group, like a Boys to Men type group?
Yeah, just like that. And a lot of times we didn't have the music we wanted, so we would just sing it a cappella. They had the good harmonies. I couldn't even sing the harmonies. I had to like close my ear so I wouldn't jump on their note. They were good with the harmonies. I just sing the middle note. But I just loved it so much. And then eventually I found a guy who... I was working at Sears, and there was a guy named Chris who, and this is in Memphis, who was giving out cars that he was selling beats for like $75 or something. So I went over there, got cool with him, made my first song with him, and I just had the bug after that.
Did you pay him $75?
No. What happened was what I was hoping would happen, that we got cool and we just wanted to work together. So, you know, he was very kind and just help me out and try to help him out where I could.
So how did that bring you to Nashville? Because you've been pretty prevalent in kind of my periphery for the last few years, because I mentioned to you, maybe even off the air, like Keith Urban and I are buds.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went over to his house once, and he was like, he's just playing some stuff from you. And he was just so high on you. And Keith is like next level. Sometimes I feel like I know music, you know, play it a little, studied it, learned. But he, like, talks in a language sometimes I don't even understand.
Yeah.
Like, he's just in a different planet.
Yeah, he's brilliant, man.
And when he's talking about how much he really, like, loves someone's music and sound, I'm like, okay, I should listen to this.
Oh, man.
And that was you. And so first I'll ask you about Urban. How did you guys get in kind of that same little world? But then what is it that brought you to Nashville?
Cool. Well, once again, Missy Gallimore, she... She was finding songs for Keith, too, and she put a Keith camp together. And so she just called me and asked me if I wanted to come. That was a few years ago, and I went. And, well, actually, I just did a couple sessions with him first. Actually, that song, Speak to a Girl, he loved that song. And so I wrote with him and a guy, Dave, that I wrote that song with. We just hit it off. He's just real cool. We like to talk about, you know, the songs just flowing and coming. And not overthinking it, just letting it flow. And he's just a brilliant dude. Obviously, he's incredible on the guitar, and it's just fun to like create with him because he wants to push the envelope. He wants to make something new and fly. So yeah, Missy's managing me now, so because she's hooked me up with everything I've had, man. So
Oh, you're good. These mics come and go. I want to play some of these songs real quick. So your first number one, I'm trying to look at years here because I've got it all. I've got your whole life right here. 2009, Someday, that you wrote, that Rob Thomas recorded.
Yes, sir.
Did you write that with him or did you write that for him?
He wrote most of that song.
But so you wrote it, but you wrote it with him.
I started it with Matt Serletic, who's produced all of the Matchbox 20 and Rob Thomas albums. I started it with him and then they finished it together.
Okay, so I'm gonna play some of this. Here's Someday. What do you mean you started? Like, tell me the process of this song, because it doesn't sound like you're all three. Like a lot of songs do, they come together at different points and different times and years later sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You started it with Rob?
With Matt.
Okay, and then Rob finished it?
Yeah, they finished it together. And so I don't know exactly how that was.
Did you ever meet Rob?
Never met him in my life.
You never met him? That's crazy. That's funny.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you'll see or you'll listen to a duet from two folks and you'll be like, I love it. And then you hear an interview, they're like, yeah, we didn't sing it together. We never met.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty wild that you still haven't met the guy. He's in Nashville a decent amount too now.
Yeah. I went to his show.
That's funny. Wait, you went to his show and you still didn't meet him?
Still haven't met him, man. It's like, I'm trying to see how long I can make it without meeting him.
Here is Stuck Like Glue, number one for Sugarland from 2010. Oh, stuck like glue, you So a couple things about this song. One of the guys that I listened to a lot as a kid, and, you know, me growing up in the 90s, it was a lot of alternative rock. It was a lot of hip-hop. And growing up in Arkansas, for me, it was a lot of country. So that was kind of my tent poles.
Yeah.
But I went to more Better Than Ezra shows than just about anybody.
Dang.
And I got on stage once with Better Than Ezra, and they were like, who knows how to play this time of year? And I did, and I was like, I do. And so I was pumped. I was going to get up on stage, and they handed me a guitar, and I'm left-handed. And I was like, you guys have left-handed guitar? And they didn't. So I didn't get to play it.
Oh, man,
but to tell
dude.
Kevin that story now, and Kevin and I have become friends, but you wrote that song with Kevin, the lead singer of Better Than Ezra,
yes,
and then
sir.
Christian and Jennifer Nettles from Sugarland.
Yes, sir.
How did that write come together?
That was cool. I had just gotten to L.A. because the Rob Thomas song was going, and I talked to my publishing company. I was in Atlanta. I was coming to Nashville. I was hearing the music in Nashville for a few years, and I was like, man, I want to do that. But they also said that they could just get me more rights if I came to L.A. So I went out there, and actually there was a guy named Casey Robinson that was working for BMI. So she should write with Kevin Griffin. I was like, cool. So I met up, and we wrote one session. It was great. We had a great time, and that was the second time we hooked up. And we just wanted to write a song, and he put up some drums in the computer, and I had actually broken my drum machine. I used to go everywhere with this big old drum machine, an MPC, and I had broken it, so it brought me back to what I used to do with my friends, just beatboxing and beating on things. So I said, man, just give me a guitar. I just started beating on it and just making the sounds with my mouth and stuff, and he loved it, and we put the little loop together. And that's just a simple song we just threw together, just trying to make something. And we got a lot of it done. And he was like, this would be perfect for Sugarland. And I was like, really? You know Sugarland? And he said, yeah, my drummer from Better Than Ezra was playing drums for them. So he sent it to them. He said, leave space open. They want to write on it too. And they did. And they made that a wild bridge on there and everything. Man.
I mean, that was a massive song.
Yeah.
Massive song. Have you met them?
I have.
Okay. It'd have been funny if you hadn't. If every song he hadn't met the person. Did you know Better Than Ezra at all from Kevin? Like before you met Kevin? Or was that not really? Because you're probably not as old as I am.
I'm close.
Okay. Did you know them at all?
I knew the songs. I didn't really, you know, sometimes you just hear songs that got big and I didn't realize that was him.
Did you know, whoa, he's good.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
That song's massive. But you're in California. What made you move to Nashville?
Well, before I had moved out there, I was coming up here to see a young friend I had up here. And her uncle was playing. I remember it was like 2007, 2008. And the thing that really made me gravitate towards the music here was hearing like the live instruments, the way they would mix the songs, just the beautiful songs. And I heard, whatever it is, it blows me away. And every time I try to tell her how I feel, it comes out, I love you. Yeah, man. It's like Brown Band. And like I started hearing all these songs that it just like kind of refreshed my soul, man. And it reminded me of the songs I grew up on that were like Van Morrison and Tracy Chapman that really my mom was playing. And there wasn't really a big, the R&B genre had kind of shrunk. And you couldn't, like when I grew up, you could write, like Babyface was writing these songs for Boys to Men that would go number one in the top 40 charts. And then also like you had songs like I'm Amazed by You or which became a top 40 song too. But you had songs like I Swear, like All for One. I loved All for One. And then there was a country version of that song, you know? So that, what I loved about the R&B songs and stuff was always right there in country music. It was always the same. And so it just clicked in my head that, man, I need to be writing this music. Like this encapsulates what I want out of music right now. And there's no other place for me to write it except for country music and in Nashville. So I was just always coming down here, and I had a place, Carla Wallace at Big Yellow Dog. She had an apartment above her publishing company on Music Row, and she rented me that apartment. So I was just splitting time between here and there. And Missy used to always tell me, come down here, come to just move down here and just leave. I just like, man, I'm not ready to leave LA yet. But eventually I left. I went to Santa Barbara. I was tired. The air's bad. Too many people. I relaxed in Santa Barbara for a minute, and then I came down here and hit it hard, baby, way out in the country.
How long have you been here now, like full-time?
3 years.
So I want to go to 2015. It Don't Hurt Like It Used To, Billy Currington.
Yeah.
Here's a clip of that. This... Do you write this one here in Nashville?
Yes, sir.
So, what was the, was this your first big Nashville, like you were in Nashville with Nashville folks getting a Nashville hit? Was this the first one?
I guess it was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did it feel different because of that? Like you kind of had, you know, put yourself in this Nashville culture and now you've actually done it here as well?
Yeah, because actually it was hard for me to connect because I didn't realize that the writers here in Nashville would book their sessions out like 4 or 5 months in advance. So I would just pop up and be like, y'all want to write? And, you know, some people like the Warren Brothers, you know, they would make room for me. But I couldn't get, you know, I couldn't get everything moving the way I wanted it to because I was just on my own. I didn't have really a manager or a publisher that was connected down here. And so that's why I wasn't having a lot of success. And Billy was a great friend of mine. I'd known Billy through Carla Wallace as well. I put a talk box on one of my songs and he heard it. He was like, what is that? What is that sound? I want to do. And so it was actually very special to me because Billy was involved and we'd been friends like for years at that point. And he just showed up at the studio and it wasn't even a writing session.
Really?
And he just.
So you guys wrote that and not even a scheduled writing session?
Yeah.
Right, that's cool.
Yeah, so.
How fast did that come out? You know, sometimes you sit down to create and stuff just falls out of you. And sometimes you just beat yourself in the head. And you're like, I don't have it today. But that song, if it's not a planned session, did that just kind of come out of you guys pretty quickly?
Very fast. It was a miracle. Like, I feel like all these songs are really just super blessings, man. When they work, we just got to be available and ready to receive the beautiful blessing, man.
Let's play Speak to a Girl. You mentioned this earlier. This is from Tim and Faith.
That's how you talk to a woman. That's how you speak to a girl. That's how you get with a lady who's worth more than anything in your whole world.
It's got to be pretty cool whenever a song that you write, and you know, you have people out pitching these songs or finding these songs, and somebody like Faith and Tim go, hey, we think that's good enough for us to sing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's got to be like one of the greatest feelings. It's something you created. One of the biggest, most influential, most powerful country artists in the past 100 years.
Yeah.
It's like, that's good enough. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, do you need those sometimes to kind of go, oh, man. Like if nothing works for a while, you're like, man, I've been writing. Nobody's picked up anything. You ever have one of those? They're like, we love it. You're like, okay, I'm back. I feel like I'm kind of back in the game. I'm rejuvenated.
Yeah, for sure.
Like,
yeah.
I would think with me, because this industry's so many failures. It's mostly failing.
Mm, yeah.
And it's, can you kind of withstand all the failing to get to the success? You know,
absolutely, man. You know, that's what it's all about.
When Tim and Faith, if they say, we want to sing that song, I got to imagine that feels great.
Yeah, make you want to cry, man.
And the first time you heard it, do you remember the first time you heard it after they cut it?
Yeah, it was on the radio.
That's the first time you heard it on the radio?
Yeah. And they played it like on every single radio station. They like premiered it,
mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty cool, man. It was,
you wrote Heaven,
beautiful.
Kane Brown, massive.
Everybody's talking about heaven like they just can't
Woo!
Wait to go.
I mean, massive.
Yeah.
Did you write this with Kane?
No, Kane was there though. He was upstairs writing another song.
That's funny.
Yeah, he rented a lake house, or
and you guys all got a bunch of writers out and all
yeah.
writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys wrote that while Kane was upstairs writing another one?
Yeah, he even came down and we hadn't even finished it. And we were like, you want to finish this? He was like, nah, y'all go ahead, man. And
that was cool of him to do that though too.
Dude, Kane is a man. That's one thing I love about country music too, and these artists. I've met so many genuine people that have just not been, you know, the LA pop thing can just be real sharkish, you know, and just so I've just met so many good people that just are like family and friends around here, man.
And if you're listening and you're wondering why I say that's cool of him to do, Kane could have easily walked down, written a line or two, changed a couple words earlier, and then been a full songwriter and taken part of the publishing.
For sure.
Like that was him going, no, you guys keep that money.
Yeah.
That's what that was. And that's what happened.
Yeah.
You guys made a whole lot more money because Kane was cool.
For sure, man. And I'm very grateful. Thank you, Kane. Love you, big dog. For real.
Yeah, Kane's a good dude, man.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your next stop before attending your next concert. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring. You're talking about men's boots, women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition, timeless style, always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort, little to no break-in period. Like, it's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, direct consumer pricing keeps the value on your feet, the money in your pocket. So stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop the new styles. You like the smell of leather or no?
I love it.
Yeah. That's what the whole store basically is. Fresh leather.
Yep.
Friendly staff. Or like the smell of staff?
I don't know. I guess I'm sure they smell good there.
Many stores have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. What a gift, too. Regular live music and events. There is no in-store experience like this. If you can't make it to a store, just visit tecovas.com.
Tecovas.com. Tecovas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today. Willie Nelson, Waylon Jennings, Kris Kristofferson. How did the biggest names in outlaw country start a musical revolution? Through one woman's vision from one tiny living room. Don't miss Mandy Moore as Sue Brewer in the new scripted Audible original, The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer and the Birth of Outlaw Country Music. Discover the true untold story of the extraordinary woman behind the outlaw country music movement and its biggest stars. Brewer shaped the sound and soul of country music as we know it today, despite never picking up an instrument herself. Lovingly dubbed as The Boar's Nest, Sue's place was an intimate staging ground where a new breed of singer-songwriters, wounded souls, wayward upstarts, that's where they would spur each other and tap into something bigger and something realer. Starring Mandy Moore and featuring Eben Moss Backrack as Shel Silverstein and TJ Osborne as Johnny Cash alongside a full ensemble cast. Audible invites you to enter the Boar's Nest and experience the rise of a musical revolution. One woman, one time, one place. The Boar's Nest, Sue Brewer, and the birth of outlaw country music. Listen now at audible.com/theboarsnest. Hey, it's Bobby Bones. I just want to say thanks to everybody who has stepped up for the kids at St. Jude. St. Jude's been leading the way in the world's best survival rates for some of the most aggressive forms of childhood cancer. Your support means that families never get a bill from St. Jude for treatment or travel or housing or food, so the families can focus on helping their child live. And that really hits home for me because I've been to St. Jude many times. I've hung out with the kids, played music for the kids. I was in the hospital a lot as a kid. Now, I didn't have cancer, but if it wasn't for people stepping up, I don't know that I would have been able to go and stay in the hospital and be taken care of. So that's why we do this, to take care of others. You can help St. Jude stop childhood cancer by becoming a partner in hope. When you do this, you'll get this awesome new This Shirt Saves Lives shirt. So join all the doctors and researchers, you know, and me in this fight, and just text the word Bobby to 785-833. It's only six numbers, but text the word Bobby to 785-833. One call away from Charlie Puth, 2016. I gotta imagine, financially, this song has been the biggest for you.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Because, it's pop, it's international. It was just everywhere you went. This song was being played for a while.
Yeah, man.
You ever go to like Kroger and it's playing over the top?
Yeah, I've been all over the place. It's been playing, man.
When you wrote this one, tell me about that.
That was a great blessing too, because I really wanted to get out of LA, and I didn't want to leave until I did something. I felt, you know, I really got something great out of the place, and I could move on, you know, because it is. It's just vultures, man, and it's sharks, and it's hard. But they called me one day, said, hey, we got this soulful guy. Can you please work with him? And he had the Fast and the Furious song, like, getting ready to, I don't even think the movie was out yet. But they had, him and Wiz Khalifa had sung the song on a late night show I looked at. I was like, that's cool. So I went and hooked up with him. And so I started writing with him. As I'm writing with him, the song's blowing up, and he's becoming this massive star. And so then he rented a house, and this was in Montecito, California, by Santa Barbara and all. That's why I moved to Santa Barbara after that, and because it was nice. But you know, we stayed in that house for like three, four days, man. And you know, everybody wrote, and I don't know where all those songs went, but it was like the last day, and they just said, "Let's just go sit by a fire pit." And we sat by the fire pit. I have this guitar because you saw me play the mandolin, so I have this guitar that I tune like a mandolin. It's only got four strings on. It's called a tenor guitar, and I had it with me. And one of the best lessons I could tell anybody. Like, that was not a scheduled session either. It was just, let's go sit by the fireplace late at night. And so because I brought that, like, it changed everything. Like, it changed my life just because I picked that up.
Why? Why because you picked that up?
Because otherwise we would have just went and sat by the fireplace and
just talked.
You know, talked and laughed and then maybe drank some drink, went to sleep. But instead, I brought that. I'm picking around on it. We're just kicking around ideas. And that song just came out pretty instantly, too.
Whenever I've talked or worked with some L.A. songwriters versus Nashville songwriters, and I'm curious to know how your creative process is, a lot of, I would say more so of the L.A. people that I've either talked with or worked with, write the melody first. Mm. And for those, if you're listening, the difference would be, like, One Call Away, there would be no words to it, but you would sit, you'd go, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And you haven't assigned any words yet, but you're writing all the melody.
Right.
Where some, a lot of my friends in Nashville are very, like, they've got concepts for lyrics. They've got a bunch of lyrics. They don't have any melody to it yet. They'd be like, all right, I'm only one call away. Like, they know what they want to say, but they don't have a melody yet.
For sure.
When you write, are you writing melody first most of the time, or are you writing, like, concept lyrically?
Most of the time, I am more like the melody thing, because I feel like, I remember Michael Jackson saying a long time ago that, like, he goes all over the world and people don't even know the language, but they know the song because the melody is so important. So, and also, when I get to scatting, like, I will say something, like, scat, almost say a word, and we'll just listen to it. The beauty of the fact that we can record it all right there, sing through auto-tune, have fun with it, you know, hit all these different notes, and then you're like, wait a minute, dude, sounds like you're saying this. Like, maybe we should write about that. Or it'll just give you a feeling or an emotion, so it can you know, bring a concept to you by that. But I also love, you know, sitting around, you know, when you're just walking around every day, somebody will say something, and you say, oh, yeah, that's a good song. Let me put that in my phone or something. And so I love the Nashville way of, you know, just having really, really thought out ideas and how they want to approach it. And then just, you know, I love both of them. It's great to switch it up.
When you did One Call Away, did you melody at first? Were you sitting around?
No, actually, DJ Frankie, he was sitting there and he said, I got ideas. Just want to write One Call Away. He said, I got this much. I'm only one call away. And he had that much. And I had the guitar and I said, I'll be there to save the day. And I just started playing the chords, and Mozella is another great writer. She said, Superman got nothing on me. And then I just bookended it. I'm only one call away. There's the hook, like, instantly, man. And then we just started kicking around the verse ideas, man. And there was a A&R guy sitting right there with us, who was the A&R for Charlie. And he was saying, this is a hit. This is a hit. It's nothing like writing something with the A&R. Usually you don't want them around. And they wouldn't be in the studio, but we're just hanging out, and the fact that he was just saying it was going to be a hit the whole time, we're like, let's do this.
Here is Never Coming Down, that you're on this song with Keith Urban. Here you go. When the sun goes down, stars come out. It's a, can you feel it? When I take it by the hand, dancing, then we'll pass it around, round, round. Yeah, we're so high, we can paint the sky, take the top right off the ceiling. And I swear we're never, ever coming down. Never coming down. You beatboxing this song?
Yeah.
Is that... Right, I'm trying to remember correctly, because we just put in clips, but I'm thinking back to this record in general. There's a whole beatbox. Oh, here it is, right here. Well, the band's on fire, and the beer's ice cold. Is it, to go in, and, did you do this in the studio with Keith?
Yeah, it was a blast. It was the funnest session, man.
Do you feel pressure to perform in a small room with Keith, or does he make it loose where it's like, hey, just go do your thing, and if it don't work this time, we'll figure something out next time?
He makes it loose.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've felt pressure. I've been doing it a long time, like... Nelly was the first person to give me a chance, a real chance in the industry. And when I used to go around him, like, I was super nervous, man. And, you know, after time, I just less nervous as time goes on.
Here is Good As You, number one, Kane Brown, again. But baby, I just wanna be good as you. Girl, you're more than just the surface. And then I'll play this one, and this song here. God Whispered Your Name. Like, I love it so much. I got married a couple weeks ago here at the house.
Woo!
And we played, this is the song that we played as right before she walked down the aisle.
Dang, that is amazing, dude.
And I've told Keith this many times. Because I don't think Keith wrote it. I know you wrote it. I think you guys wrote it and got it to Keith, right?
Yeah, and he produced the shoo-shoo out of it.
And I talked to Keith. I was like, man, that song means so much to us. And he would have been at the wedding. They were out of the country. But we played it as all of our, what do you call it?
Bridesmaids.
Bridesmaids walk down. But this song, to me, like in the last few years, you wrote it. I can tell you to your face, like this is one of the best songs that my ears have been exposed to in a long time. Because I was feeling it in my life when this song was out.
Yeah, man.
You know, and I think that's a big part of enjoying a song, too.
Yeah, connecting to it, right?
It's like the actual connection of it.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that one, too, man.
Thank you. That means so much to me. I appreciate it. I got, like, you know, goosebumps with you saying that, man. I want to see some of that footage if I can sometime, man.
You still play saxophone at all?
Nah, I'm going to pick it back up, though.
When did you stop playing?
Well, I was really playing in middle school in the band in school and stuff. And when we went to high school, the band had to play during the football game. And I said, I need to go play football. I can't let them play football and I come out with a saxophone in the middle of the football game, man.
There was a player at Arkansas named Dan Hampton who ended up being in the NFL Hall of Fame, but he would go out in the Arkansas football games. He wouldn't go in at halftime in his full football uniform. Whoa. Hall of Fame player would go out and play in the band.
No way.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
To look back at now. Did you ever go play like on Bill Street?
I did. Yeah, you know what's up, man.
And so were you playing saxophone out there?
I was. My dad took me down there.
And what was the goal? To get better, to make money, both?
It was just for fun. Yeah, to get better. Definitely to get better. Like, he would put me in there with musicians that the whole thing was just a freestyle impromptu, you know, thing, jazz music. And they would just give me a chance to just hit a solo. As long as I know what key it's in, I just boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop, boop. Is that an instrument you could pick back up, though, and in a week be able to play a little bit?
Yeah, maybe a little bit longer than a week. I could figure it out.
If I put one of... Pull it out, Mike. No, I don't have one. I don't have one. Could you figure out something if I handed you one right now just to be serviceable?
Yeah, I could do a little something on there. It's all about that reed and, like, you got to suck on the reed, make it all wet and moist. Yeah, that, if you just pick it up and it's dry and it'll start screeching, it's like nails on a chalkboard, man.
You played at Watershed this past weekend. You do a whole set?
I did, man.
When you do your sets, and how long was the set you played this weekend?
An hour.
Okay, do you play some of the songs that you've written?
Yeah, I play a lot of them.
Do you tell people so they know you wrote it and you're not just covering it?
Yeah, I got to tell them. I hope they're listening, you know? Because the beauty of having these songs is that I get to play songs people know. And it's nothing like playing songs people know that they can sing along to. As opposed to, here's 12, 15 songs that are coming out that you guys have never heard. It's not as fun.
You played at Lollapalooza as well.
Yeah, man.
You had a big weekend. That's why I wasn't giving you a hard time when you're like, I just woke up. I was like, if I'd had your weekend, I don't know that I'd have woken up at all on a Monday. But you went from Gorge, Washington, Seattle-ish to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
What was the difference in the vibe for those two festivals?
It was one of the funnest weekends of my life, dude, because the Gorge was crazy. And the weather, like in Seattle, we flew into Seattle first and got to... The weather was just perfect, man. I got to see one of my childhood friends out there. And then Tim, I literally got on stage with Tim McGraw and sang I Like It, I Love It with him. I couldn't believe I got to sing that song with him, you know.
Do you have to riff? And this is what I was going to tell earlier. I was doing something in Austin. There was a festival and Sugar Land was playing and they were doing, it was when Christian and Jennifer got back together. Mm. They had put out a record and they were back and they were doing Stuck Like Glue.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Christian really well. He had opened for me when I was doing some comedy, some theater stuff. And I'd like Christian come out and, you know, just play before me for half an hour. Mm. And so for part of like that area, Georgia, Alabama, it was easy for him to get to. So he came out and did some shows with us because he lives in Atlanta.
Wow.
And so we were in Austin. They were together and he was like, hey, you want to come out and do a song with us with Sugarland? And I was like, not really, because I know what I'm good at and what I'm not. And I don't need to go out and try to sing some Sugarland stuff or anything. And he was like, well, come out and do like the rap part to Stuck Like Glue. And I was like, I don't know that I'm just going to be in it enough to just walk out and feel that immediately.
Yeah.
Like there was, I said, but, and so the network was going, hey, we do something, come in and do something so we can put it on TV. That we're looking for one of these performances from Sugarland. if you want to go out, if you will do this, this will be the one we use for TV. And I was like,
damn.
For me, that's a weird kind of hip. I don't know what you call Jennifer doing that. I mean, it's, I wouldn't say it's hip hop. It's kind of rap, but it's like, I don't know.
I don't know what to call it.
I don't know what to call it either. And I hope that's not offensive to you.
Nah, man. They made that prostitute anyway.
And so I go out and I tried. I tell you, I went out and I did it. I give it a C-. But my point is, I looked over all the words and that the words to that, they weren't hard to remember. But I didn't want to mess up that project, mm-hmm. right? You go out with Tim and you're doing I Like It, I Love It.
Mm-hmm.
You can't mess up those words.
Can't mess them
so
up.
So are you staring at it beforehand just going, I know the words, but I need to make sure again.
Definitely was, man.
Because I was doing that too. Like, I knew every word just stuck like glue.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, all right. Sweet sugar bottle. You know, yeah.
Let me see. Uh-oh. Okay, yeah. Uh-oh.
Then you feel like you did good? You come off stage, you're like, I nailed it?
You know, just going to be honest, I think I might have goofed up the first line, which was pretty. I think I played it off okay. Tim helped me out, but I think I killed the rest of it. I gotta wash my truck and dress up. I don't think I got that truck line right away. I kind of just went up there and I was like, oh shoot, it's really time. Here we go. I gotta wash. What am I supposed to say?
Earlier that day, that's how you performed.
Yeah.
Okay. So you were still in it though a little bit.
Yeah, man. It was a blast. Like we could. Yeah. They didn't know, man.
They never know.
But I'm gonna tell you the real, man.
As long as you're smiling and you're having a good time, the crowd is too.
Yeah.
That's what I learned a long time ago.
Yeah.
They don't know if you mess up.
Mm-hmm.
You play it off.
Yeah.
You know, so many of my friends would go like, hey, if I forget a word, I'll just put the mic out there.
Yeah.
Everybody just sings it back.
Especially that song, man.
Yeah. So let's talk about the new song for a second. Because you guys came in on the show, Beer With My Friends.
Yeah,
you,
man.
And Cole Swindell and David Lee Murphy came in. I'll play a little clip of this for you.
Woo!
So how's this song doing right now? How do you feel like? Do you feel like starting to cut through a little bit?
Yeah, I think so for sure. Like as soon as we put it out, people were hearing it all in Florida. They're like, man, over the holiday weekend or something it was. And it's been really doing good on the streaming and stuff. And
who'd you write that one with?
David Lee Murphy and Brian Simpson. Yeah.
And Brian's been replaced by Cole Swindell.
That's right.
David Lee Murphy's like the greatest dude though, right?
He's so phenomenal, man. He's just, everybody always says he's the coolest guy, and he is. He just comes around and he's got great ideas and he's a phenomenal writer. And it was just fun to hang out with, man.
And whenever you guys, because you have this song, were you writing it for you to cut or were you writing it, you're just writing a song that day?
We're just writing a song. Most of the time I don't try to even, you know, make it about me. I just want to make sure we're getting the best song. But there's another one that just came out real fast. It was Brian's idea. He's like, this song, Beer With My Friends. I'm like, all right, that's cool. And not too complicated, you know. And we just wrote it on the guitar, and it was great. And they loved it. I loved it. But once we really demoed it, it was like, ooh, this thing is like slapping, you know. And man, Kenny helped us out, man. Kenny Chesney and Buddy Cannon went in the studio. They sped it up and got all those guitars rocking. Once he sped it up and stuff, I was like, oh, this thing is party central.
So why did you cut it?
Why did you cut it? Because I loved it.
Were you moved?
Yeah.
Huh?
I loved it, man. I was like, this was bona fide hit to me, you know? And I wanted to get some cool guys on there with me, just beer with my friends. And David, I was like, I'd love for you to just get on here with me, man. Let's just do it together. Because that was the demo. Me and him just did the demo. I was just, I love this. Let's just do this.
And what about Cole? How'd you come to inviting Cole to do the song?
I've always liked Cole. I love his music. And, you know, we've been wanting to do something together. And we're on the same label. So I asked Chris Lacey at the time. I was like, can you just send this to Cole? And right away, as soon as he heard it, he loved it. And just came to the studio, man, and made it happen.
Were you planning on pursuing the solo artist career at this point? Or did you write this song and it kind of shoved you into doing it and committing to it?
Nah, it's actually been my plan ever since I was a youngster, man, like a long time. So I've had, this is my third major label record deal. I've probably had 5 or 6 record deals. And I just really finally got a great team with Warner Brothers, you know, Espo and Chris Lacey and all these great people at Warner here. And I had just put out Good Love was a song I put out, you know, like last year or like whatever. But so we'd already been promoting and pushing the artist thing, man. I was like, this one'll hit them hard right
here.
How
do you feel? Like, you feel like it's going good? Like, you feel like radio's like, this is one. I mean,
yeah. That's the one they really wanted. I went on a radio tour.
Oh, you did the radio tour?
I did. In the middle of COVID. I was the first one to actually go out. Like, they had a whole idea to send me out there on a bus and bring the speakers out and do this whole presentation on people's front yards, in front of their house or in front of their radio station. And we hit a whole bunch of them. And every time I played that song, they're like, we want that song, we want that song. And so I'm just so glad I finally can give it to him, man.
Let me play a little bit of Good Love so people know what you're talking about. If you had to pick one, artist, songwriter, producer, and that was all you could do, which one are you choosing?
Oh, just for me?
Just for you. If you can only do one.
If I could only do one. Ah, nobody's ever put it like that. I would have to say just writing, because then I would be singing songs I didn't write, right?
Yeah.
So I love singing to people, but yeah, I love to create. If I would love to create, man. It's,
what are you
it's
doing?
A great feeling.
Like, what do you do for fun? What do you do in Nashville? Like,
create songs. So,
for fun for you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably why you're so good at what you do, right? I mean, I feel like for me that's the case. Like, I enjoy what I do, so I get better at it because I love doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm kind of inspired by the job.
For sure, man.
Which makes me better at the job.
Yeah.
So if you take yourself out of music, though, like, what are you doing around town?
Yeah, I've been trying to, you know, have more fun outside of music like that. But I like to play basketball. I like to, be out in nature, get on a boat somewhere, or go jump on one of these horses out there in the country, bareback, see what they're going to do.
See what they're going to do never works out for me. That's see what they're going to do never is good. Never is good. Well, listen, man, I'm super pumped you came by. I know you had a crazy weekend, but I'm glad you came over to the house, said what up. And
I'm so grateful to be here, man.
I think it's what I like about you coming by is we were able to, because we've been talking for 40 minutes or so, but once people see your entire package together, they don't realize how much they've been secretly influenced by Shy Carter.
Yeah.
Like, and that's kind of the plight of the songwriter sometimes.
Uh-huh.
I got buddies that have written a ton of number ones and nobody knows who they are.
Right.
And they always wanted to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
But they never either committed to it or they never felt confident enough to go for it.
Yes, sir.
And so, I mean, you wrote all that and now you're just like, let's go. Like,
yeah.
Let's go, and I'm, you know, you're going to be the face of you.
That's right, man.
That's really cool. That's awesome, man. Well, I'm a big fan.
Thank you, sir.
You know,
I'm a big fan of yours. I have a question for you.
Okay.
Is how do you possibly do a radio show, podcast, TV shows, all these different things, man? God gave you a little bit of extra hours in a day? Or you just wake up at 3 every morning?
I don't know if it's extra hours. And I say this as, and I mean this as I say, because I'm not that talented at anything. Like, just, no, I, just hear me out. Hear me out. I don't have a skill. I don't have something. I don't have a gift of a skill that God gave me that I'm like, I naturally am good at music, or I'm a great communicator, or I'm great. But what I was given was, no one is more tenacious than I am. Like, I don't. If I have a goal, I don't stop.
Wow.
And even if I suck and I don't stop, I get better as I not stop. None of this makes sense in the English language. Everything I'm saying here is wrong, but I don't quit, and because I don't quit, I continue to learn.
Yeah.
So eventually, I get good at stuff because I've been bad at it so long, and I've just kept on.
Yeah.
So now I'm pretty good at a lot of things. I can write books. I can do TV. I can do radio. Not great at any of it, but my trick, you know, in my pocket has been, I just don't quit.
Wow.
I appreciate that question. That's how I have time, is that I just grind. But now I have a wife. I just got married.
Yeah,
first time ever.
Yeah, man.
And now I have a wife, and her goal with me sometimes is stop. Like,
yeah.
Like, it, you're not your job.
Yeah.
It's a big part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But I put so much worth into what I created because I never had anything growing up. I was just a poor kid.
Yeah.
You know?
But now you got somebody who sees the worth in you, and
she,
they're like, you don't even need all that. You're already worthy, man. You can relax a little bit.
She tells me that. I don't know that I always believe her, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
And so for me, I appreciate that question. But yeah, this is not about me. This is about you.
No, but I have seen, like, that's the number one thing I see in life in general, man. It's never the person that's just the most talented or whatever. It's the person who works the hardest, man, and just never gives up. That always wins. That becomes the real winner, man.
And most of the times, we're talking about, this is an industry where you don't have a lot of success until you get some success. Like, you're always fighting failure.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody sees when you're failing. So if you can just continue swimming,
yeah,
you'll get to the other side.
Same for me, man.
Yeah, nobody sees. Nobody sees all the songs that you write that don't get cut.
That's right.
Nobody sees all the times I didn't get hired or I get told no for projects. But what they do see is when it does work out.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we can continue, we can withstand the no's,
mm-hmm,
they can't keep us from the yeses.
Then one day you'll be ballroom dancing
one
in front
day
of America, boy.
I did win that one, and I was not good. I was not good. All right, you guys, follow Shy Carter Official on Instagram. Stream Beer With My Friends. Check it out. If you see him in your town, go see him. Love the guy. Again, follow him at Shy Carter Official. Shy, good to talk to you, man.
You too, my brother.
Woo!
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Tecovas store. Have a complimentary drink. Shop new styles. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Tecovas.com. Tecovas.com. You can probably spell it. You probably know it. Tecovas.com. Find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey, girlfriends. It's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.